kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Just a bunch of catching up on this one. We did our wrestles last episode. We got to catch up on some reviews and, you know, get ourselves current before the whole summer lull hits. Starting things off, Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Cold. Didn't watch wrestling, though.
No.
I heard a big deal was made of it. There was a Ronda Rousey thing and a New Day Dragon Zord thing. and some pancakes and an attempt to get someone of his Owen Hart into the Hall of Fame. Was that during WrestleMania 2?
That was during the Hall of Fame ceremony. I think two of the Mark Henry and Jeff Jarrett were both trying to pretty much plead their case to get Owen in the Hall of Fame, but it comes down to his widow and her not wanting WWE to profit off of his name anymore. So it's who knows if it'll ever happen.
Yeah, and Owen Hart was around during my day watching wrestling, too. So I was like, oh, I know what's going on, man. It's a shame. But at the same end of the day, though, it is pretty much her call. And in some respects, you can almost understand it. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, it's a part they make money on the other part. It is kind of an honor to be listed there. So it's hard to say.
I know even Mark Henry, during his speech, he's like, you know, I'm not the company asking. I'm not Vince McMahon asking. I'm asking as, you know, his other brother, please let him join us.
So he would. I take it they were like close back on the day.
Oh yeah, they were very close. Yeah.
Well, maybe that'll count for something in our eyes. Who knows? I mean, time has been time. Time has passed. So
who knows? Maybe, but we should probably dive into this stuff. I don't know how big of an episode this is going to be. I know I'm exhausted from the weekend. Just 5 fucking days of wrestling, and it's still going. By the time we're recording this, it's still Monday night.
Monday Night Raw, man.
Yeah, Friday they had stuff going on. Let's see. Last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know if anything was going on Thursday. Friday was the Hall of Fame. Saturday was NXT. Sunday was WrestleMania. Monday tonight is Raw. Tomorrow is SmackDown. Next week they're doing the Superstar Shakeup thing, so It's a busy time for wrestling.
One might call it a wrestle fest.
Like a mania, even.
a battle royale. That's just world. It doesn't even make sense.
Oh, man. Anyway, let's start this off. First game to talk about is called Super Daryl Deluxe, developed and published by Dan and Gary Games. It released April 10th on the Switch, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. Things are bound to get stirred up when an enthusiastic, bizarrely dressed new kid wanders into town. This go-getter's name is Daryl, and he just wants to make friends. What starts out as an innocent effort to help jumpstart a young contraband textbook business turns into a harrowing quest through the school and its enormous monster-filled classrooms, in the hope of becoming the most popular kid in town. Oh, and saving everyone's lives is top priority, of course. No need to worry. There's nothing to see here at Water Falls High School. Pernell, what the hell is this game?
I would say this is a prime candidate. You know, every once in a while you might come across like a series of sequences like, okay, what are you reviewing? I'm reviewing Far Cry 5. What are you reviewing? This other game that everybody expects to be good. And then you're like, hey, Pernell, here's this game that sounds wacky. You should play it. And I looked at it, I was like, this sounds odd. And I've never heard of it. Gimme. And suffice it to say, if it gives you some perspective on how I felt about this game going into it, it broke my spell over Monster Hunter. I was playing Monster Hunter like obsessively when this game was handed to me. And it broke the spell. I hadn't played Monster Hunter in 3 weeks. Aside from like 2 days ago, where I was like, hey, come play with me. You can see this darn event thing or whatever. But I have not, because I really like this game. Essentially, it is a very bizarre concept where you are this kid who goes to a high school that, I guess, a number of years ago, I'm not going to go into specifics because some of it's spoilers, but a number of years ago, two students were like the best of everything. Like, they were super students. They were on the path of curing world hunger, and they made the town ultra super special. And I'm using these words because they fit the situation. It's one of those exaggerated things where it's like, these kids are the best of everything. They graduated from college 10 times in 2 years, that kind of thing. So they invented a book called How to Interact with Others. And this book was essentially a book that, when read, cured all of man's problems. Like, it was the ultimate self-help book. It made everyone feel good. And something happened, which this is where it gets in the spoiler test. I'm not going to say what's going on overall, but essentially, into the present, these two kids are remembered as being horrible people, and the student body hates them, and they celebrate the fact that no one talks about them anymore as an actual holiday. And you show up pretty much on the first day of this world wake-up day, they called it. So they throw you right into it. You are a nerdy kid, and everyone treats you like shit.
But, so it's my game. It's the story of my life.
Oh, I gonna lie, for as badly as they treat this kid, if this was my life, I'd be happy to have it. I'm gonna tell you why. Because in the beginning of the game, they give you a book. Like, that's how they pay you to bully you to do work for them. They give you this book with no pages. They go, we're gonna reward you by giving you pages from the book for doing work for us, which is textbook contraband. So each page from this book, as you get them and buy them from these kids, is actually a move that you can unlock in this, what is actually an action combat RPG, like pseudo RPG game. So you get a page, say, like, you know, discussing differences, for example, and discussing differences, the page is actually a 3-hit punch combo. when you use the book, that page from the book, you have a 3-hit combo. You can equip up to 4 moves, later 8 moves at a time, with 4 of them switch. You can switch between 2 sets of 4 rows. You get 4 wall moves and a dash attack, and they each have their own respective cooldowns that are power levels and cooldowns and traits like melee or ranged or poison damage or all kinds of things, stun damage. And essentially, you are fulfilling missions for student body members and faculty members in some very rare instances, where you have to go about running through the school, beating guys up, doing some fetch quests here and there, and in the process, exposing the story that takes place throughout the game. Enemies and environments are ridiculously imaginative. So you're going into classrooms, for example, the science room, but then the science room contains a weird dimensional portal that takes you to a vector hologram poor dimension where beakers are walking around with dorky smiles on their faces, and Bunsen burners are burning, are trying to set you on fire, and Genghis Khan's younger brother's just kind of hanging out up on the rafters saying, what am I doing here? How do I get home? I didn't make that up. That's actually true. So this game is essentially going through crazy environments and engaging with the student body and these crazy monsters and enemies that are traversing the environments trying to give you problems. Let me think, because there's a lot to try to digest here. So
basically, the game is insane.
Yes, it very much so is insane. And it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. And the writing in the game is excellent, because I'm not gonna lie, a lot of the quests that you go on to unlock abilities and items that you can equip for stat boosts and whatnot, they're pretty much fest quests, or kill 20 of these guys to accomplish a thing, which would be pretty bland or get old in a normal context. But for me, I wanted to know what the result would be from the dialogue standpoint. Most of the cases, I fulfilled every quest I came across. Like, I didn't feel forced. I wanted to. Hell, some of the equipment gets overlapped very quickly, to the point where you'll get something and it'll be immediately, you know, overwritten for something better within 10 minutes. That has happened. And I don't care. I want everything. Every item you equipped in your, you get a textbook with, as your menu or inventory system. And when you go to the inventory screen, it's a sketch of Daryl on the right. And every time you equip something from your inventory, it adds the sketch's image. Like, the main game character, Daryl, doesn't reflect your equipment, but the sketch version of him does. So, believe it or not, it actually still is hilarious to do this, like, weird, like, paper pinup thing to see, like, okay, this is what the scorpion legs makes him look like, and this is what the cactus fist looks like, or this is what the magic wand of Derelict does, or Count Bear, like, Count Roger's cape looks like on him. And so you'll be, like, kind of matching stuff up, just putting it on just for the hell of it, and then other times you'll be doing it for the actual stat bumps. This is like the weirdest review I've ever done, because I'm having trouble even describing it, but I legitimately fell in love with this game. Like, I still play it. I'm going to beat it. I put off blockbuster AAA games to play this game, and not because of the review, because I've played more than enough of it to give it a solid review. I don't care. It's good.
Speaking of good, I love the visuals of this game.
Yes, that's one. Thank you for saying that. The artwork in this game is very unlike what you usually get in video games that I've come across recently. There's no like dashingly beautiful women. They're just average kids, average guys, average girls. Everyone just has this look about them, and it's a unique look. Animation wise, it's very beautiful in motion. The one thing I will say, though, is this is probably a personal Purnell problem, is that when it's like when you're running on a nice quality television set and you're running left to right sometimes, it might mess with your vision a little bit because the animation is very smooth, like too smooth sometimes when you're scrolling between different environments. But the character animations are very sound. All the enemies are very pronounced and personable. Daryl himself, every attack that you equip gives him a very unique animation, and as you upgrade it by selling textbooks to get experience points or just beating guys up for experience points, you will actually occasionally, in addition to just giving the attacks more power and whatnot, you will also get visual upgrades to the attacks. So I guess the best one that I came across was that there's a hammer that you start out with. One of the first attacks you get is just a wooden mallet, but eventually it becomes a rhino on a stick. My favorite attack was a trio of moles that you could summon from the ground, like a pop-up launch attack. And the starting level is just three whack-a-moles that pop out of the ground. The final version is three whack-a-moles with the big POW letters from a Mario block that just shows up on the screen. And all the moles are wearing like battle helmets. But then at the end of the animation, one of the battle helmets pops off and the mole looks confused, wondering where his helmet went.
Oh, my Lord.
Like, they did a lot for this game. Like, this is quality shit. And I will admit, I had a weird conundrum at one point where you ever play a beat 'em up where you kind of feel like you get into a rhythm of beating jerks up. You're like, okay, the goal is to just keep a guy juggled and never give him a chance to strike back. Mm-hmm. You know, I had that vibe a couple times where I'm like, I'm just doing that. I just keep guys from hitting me and everything works. It's just a juggle system. And I started to kind of I was preparing to dock at points for that. Like, well, I can just master the combat. It's not a big deal, whatever. But then I started thinking about it. And most of the games that we've played in, like The Secret of Mana's, the Streets of Rage beat-em-ups, action RPGs, they're the same logic, really. If you get into a good rhythm of beating jerks up, they're not going to hit you. You're going to keep them back. And that's the goal. You want to do that. So that shouldn't be a detriment to the product. And you do eventually start fighting guys who give you grief until you level up to the point where you're stronger than them. Like, there's like Anubis characters, like, you know, like the dog-faced god Anubis, who summons like Hands of the Dead. It shoots them across the screen to grab at you. So you're like, crap, I can't just rush the guy. I got to come up with a tactic to get in and get close to beat the tar out of him. Unless you want to use landmines or bear traps or duck boomerangs or bananas or any of the ridiculous number of things you're able to do in this game. Because you do have a lot of abilities, more abilities than you'll actually need to play through. So you can customize your playstyle however you see fit. Though sometimes there are unlockable items that you'll come across in the form of a monitor called Ham Melt. I don't know what that refers to. It's like all abbreviated, but it's Ham Melt is what it spells. And it's like a monitor with eyes, and it will flash on the screen a specific type of attack you have to hit it with, like whether it's like a melee attack or a launch attack or a stun attack, and then it'll be the grade of attack, because every attack has a grade from like trash to okay to good to great to probably excellent. And then the level that you have to have the attack evolve to. So you might need a melee, okay, 5 or higher rank attack to break the monitor. And if you break the monitor, you release some kind of item or key or unlockable, like a photograph, which I think is going to come into a good play later in the game as I inquire more photographs. But I'm not going to say what they do. So you'll be doing that kind of stuff, which will make you kind of want to mix up your inventory. But another thing worth mentioning is, though it's not important, you'll still probably want to do this anyway. You eventually unlock, I guess, like a sort of battle arena, which is actually a D&D nerd club that plays out D&D adventures in the gymnasium. So you'll be in the gym. He's like, okay, you're now in the forest of Ransaculon, and a guy is attacking you with ant monsters, and you'll have to go through a number of rounds as he's playing out the story. And these rounds will force you to use a specific set of equipment and a specific set of attacks. So it'll force you to fight with things you don't typically use. So you can play around with that. And of course, it's just like a general battle royal arena too, if you just want to do that.
Yeah.
And you can refight bosses. They unlock boss equipment, which you can wear and gives you special boss like abilities and attacks. There's a lot going on in this game.
It sounds like it. And it all sounds really, really good as well. So I got to know, $20, what is your verdict on this one?
I'm glad I was able to play it for this review, because I can tell people vehemently it's worth your damn money. This is a good game. And I would be sad if people out there playing full price for games and decide they want to ignore this one because it's not a AAA title. This deserves to be played by as many people as possible, especially if you like action RPG type beat 'em up-y games. I shouldn't say it's an RPG because people think Secret of Mana, but think, you know, like Guardian Heroes, side-scrolling beat 'em up-y type things, you know? But RPG-like elements. You level up your skills and upgrades. This is a quality game. They put a lot of work into this shit. You need to be playing it. You, talking to you, Joe, you should buy this game and play it, man. I think you'd like it, too.
I really want to. There's one big thing holding me back from doing it.
Console releases?
It is not on Xbox. It's on Switch. It's on PlayStation. It's on Steam. There's that one fucking platform. Dan and Gary, if you're listening, bring it to Xbox. Don't do this. Don't leave one platform out. I hate that. That is so shitty when one platform is just left behind. Because this game looks incredible. I want to drop $20 on this one. I'll probably do it on the Switch, but I would really, really prefer to do it on Xbox.
Yeah, I was about to say, at least you have the Switch. You could do it on there, but I get what you're saying, too. It's sad that people who have an Xbox can't play it.
Yeah, it's never fun. It's never fun for one section of the gaming universe to be left out. Like, if it was a Switch exclusive, Switch and PC, okay. If it was PlayStation exclusive, PlayStation and PC, okay. The fact that it's on everything but Xbox, just, it's stupid. It's stupid. Don't leave someone out. And that goes for all platforms. If it's on everything but PlayStation, bring it to PlayStation. If it's on everything but Nintendo, fucking bring it to Nintendo. Let everyone enjoy games.
Or at least let people know an honest to goodness reason why you didn't do it. Because I genuinely wonder sometimes, like, why not?
Yeah.
But genuinely, I feel like I'm in agreement. This is like, I feel like if you're going to do it for 2 out of 3, just make it 3 out of 3. Unless there's some kind of crazy reason why you can't. But I would like for as many people as possible to play this game. I'm not sure how many other people are out there gushing about it, but all of them should be. How many review codes went out there? If I see a guy talks trash about this game, I would actually question them and go, why did you not like this game?
Are you going to cut a bitch?
I would cut a bitch with a page from a book. I failed in the basement. I would do it.
You know what? This is a good segue to. Let's talk about a game that is on all platforms, and that is called Bombslinger, developed by Mode 4, published by Pladius/Plugin Digital. This one is out April 10th on Xbox One, PS4, and out of early access on Steam, April 11th on the Switch, $11.99 on all platforms. Wear the poncho of the Bombslinger, a former ruthless bandit turned rancher, as he sets out on a journey to avenge the brutal murder of his wife. Bomb your way through hordes of enemies, defeat your former posse, and get to the final showdown with its leader, the Gunslinger. If it sounds like bombs in Western, that is pretty much what this is. This is a Western-themed Bomberman-style game where there's two modes to the game. Obviously, they have the four-player bomber royale where it's just you and three friends going at it, you know, blow each other up. True Bomberman style fashion. It's a shame that I have to keep saying Bomberman, but that's like the genre in my eyes.
So it pretty much plays exactly like you drop an actual like exploding object on the ground, walk away from it.
It has the grid-shaped layout with, you know, things explode in four directions. You pick up different power-ups that let you drop more bombs, or it gives you bigger explosions. You could kick bombs. Just it's Wild West Bomberman. It really is.
I have to kind of wonder at this point, almost to kind of step into this review, was there like some call to arms in the last year for new Bomberman games? Because you have this game. I did that crawl game a few weeks ago, which is basically horror Bomberman.
Well, that's an older game, too.
Oh, Crawl was like older. It was a port of a game.
Yeah, that was on PS4. That was an older PS4 game that got ported over to Switch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that probably came up before Super Bomberman R did.
Oh yeah, definitely. Couple years. Beat it by a couple years.
Oh, a couple of years. Damn.
But yeah, Super Bomberman R is coming out, and I played Bomberman R on the Switch, and I've played Bombslinger, and I'll say now, Bombslinger is definitely the winner of the two in my eyes.
Seems like what happened with Crawl, too.
I thought Bomberman was, you know, it was too clunky, it was too slow. Granted, I haven't played it since all the updates have come out. When it does hit Xbox later on this year, I plan on giving it a second shot, mainly because I want to use the Master Chief Bomberman, which is fucking
awesome.
That was
the exclusive. No, I did remember him. I couldn't remember the PlayStation exclusive, because Master Chief is on Ratchet. Xbox. It's Ratchet.
Yep.
Okay, so it's Ratchet Bomber. Peabody Bomber. That's random as shit. And Master Chief Bomber.
But now we're talking about Wild West Bomber.
Pew Pew Bomber.
And, you know, it has the death match, the traditional death match, whether it's hit point based or lives based. You could have, you know, different ways to set everything up.
I like that option, honestly, if you can choose between the two.
Yeah, nothing super fancy in terms of the deathmatch. The big thing here is the campaign, where it is a full-on story mode for Bomberman-style gameplay, where you start off at your burned-down ranch, and then you exit south, and then the game begins, where all of the levels are randomly generated, so it's kind of has that roguelite aspect to it, where every time you play, levels are going to be different, item drops are going to be different. When you destroy enemies, they can drop money, you could save the money, and there's shops in the game where you could buy equipment, or you could replenish your health, stuff like that.
Okay, I got to ask a distinctive question related, because I think it'll add some light to it as a guy who loves Bomberman games. So, is this like Bomberman in that a level is like a screen, and you like a basically one screen worth of stuff, and when you clear it, you move on? Or is it more like how Robo Warrior was, or Bob Blaster Master Boy, where it's like a world you're kind of walking through, which is multiple screens long, and you're just blasting your way through it and finding stuff as you go?
It's multiple screens, but each screen is basically its own set of standalone level, I guess, where you'll walk into a screen, the walls will close off, so you're just trapped in that screen. You got to kill all the enemies to move on, and then the walls open back up, and you're allowed to move back on.
And you can go from like multiple directions. You don't have to, like, you're not forced to go in one direction.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's like Zelda too. That's kind of cool. Like, that's how the exploration sounds like then. It's like, mm-hmm. How Zelda, the original Zelda had screen to screen to screen.
Yeah, pretty much. It's that mixed with Bomberman style gameplay. And
that sounds good.
It works really well. My biggest hang up with the campaign is it is fucking hard. Like you get different power-ups in the game, which use a spirit that you can use. Like, there, you can get a gun power-up, so you could just fucking shoot people.
Get these bombs out of here.
They have exploding barrels in the game, which are basically, if you blow those up, it's basically a full-power bomb blast, up, down, left, and right, you know, the four mm-hmm. directions. One of the power-ups lets you drop one of those barrels pretty much anywhere, so you could drop one in a crowded intersection, set a bomb next to it, run away, and fucking wreck everyone. So it does a lot in terms of making you stronger. There's different charms that you could equip. Like, some of them will start you off with higher bomb power, might give you an extra heart to start off. Normally you have 3 hearts when you start. When all 3 hearts are gone, game over. There are plenty of ways to get extra hearts through the game. As you kill enemies, you'll gain experience, you'll level up, you could get extra hearts that way, you could get extra spirit that way, you could refill your health and spirit if you're getting low on health and you're getting worried. You could spend every time you level up, it gives you 3 different options, and they're all going to be random. So you could be on 1 hit point left and level up and not get shit that you need.
Oh,
it's the joys of being a roguelike and everything being random. But yeah, this is a tough fucking game. The one game I had 7 hit points, and I went into the second boss, who just tosses a shitload of knives in directions. I couldn't beat it with 7 hit points, full health. I went in there and
he was hitting me. You for 1 hit point per smack.
Oh yeah. Every knife was a hit point.
Yeesh.
Yeah, it was tough. Compounded with the difficulty is I didn't see any kind of option to continue your game. So if you're on the second stage and you die, you got to start back over. And most games, that's not a big deal, but due to the length of how long it takes to go through some of these levels of, you know, kill the enemies, make sure you're in the right position, enemy's going to walk away if the bomb is there, so you got to chase after him. You know, one level, and I mean like the one world, the first world up until you fight the boss, you could spend a half hour doing it.
Whoa.
And if you get to the second world and you die, you got to start from scratch all over again. So they're...
Does this have like any like how like there's like this new school of roguelite now where they try to mitigate that sort of thing by like having you access abilities to maybe like build a warp zone if you can bring a certain number of items to a guy on the map, like maybe a shot might sell a warp item or something like that?
I haven't seen any kind of warp items. Again, the second world was wrecking me, so I did not beat the game. I haven't even gotten to the third. I saw four worlds. I don't know if there's more to it. I don't know if it scrolls further to the left. I'm admitting right now that this game has kicked my ass repeatedly.
That makes it sound appealing.
You can unlock the charms that I mentioned, that they could, you know, you could start off with extra health or stronger bombs, stuff like that. You can unlock different charms through the game, and you can also unlock the ability to equip more than one charm. So you could make it theoretically a little bit easier that way. But again, the bosses in this game are dicks. They are like straight up dicks. They are awful and I hate them and they kick my ass every time and I can't stop trying to take them down.
They make you work for it.
Yeah. My only other real negative with this game, aside from the difficulty, no online play.
What is that? Sounds like I said, it's a Bomberman game with no online play.
It's old school Bomberman. What was an SNES Bomberman game without online play? It was Bomberman.
But that was before the internet.
Yeah.
Unless you had Next Band, I guess.
Yeah. I guess when the game first launched, it didn't have multiplayer at all. And the four player multiplayer was added in. They were asked if they were going to have online play, because I actually looked this up before I jumped on to see if it was something they're planning. And they said that just the cost of trying to develop online for an indie developer, it's just not something that they could really possibly do.
And it makes sense more so if it's like you said, where they kind of added as an afterthought, like, hey, here's a multiplayer mode, but we were really going for this single player campaign.
Yeah. Like their official statement is, online multiplayer is not in our plans at the moment, as it's a fairly huge feature and we're a very small team. In the back of our minds, it would become an option if the game is successful. So I guess we'll see. This is from July of 2016. And from what I can see, there's no online play at all, unless I'm missing something in the menus.
It's crawl syndrome.
Yeah. So it's definitely one of those things where if you have friends to play with, it definitely helps out. Otherwise, even it's still just a single player game for $12, I got to give it a very recommended try. It's a lot of fun. I love the visual style to it. It has a pixelated visual style to it, which, you know, most games have. The fun thing is when you go into a store, it turns into third person, like camera right behind you, and it shifts to a three-dimensional world still in pixel art style. And it's a really cool transition. And it's the little things in games like this where that transition to that different visual style just works really well. And the game is really, really cool overall. If you don't have friends to play with locally and you're just going to do single player, it's still worth checking out. If you have friends who come over and visit, even fucking better, because you will hate each other after playing, because that's what Bomberman games do. They destroy friendships.
Yeah, that's right. It's a true party when you want to kill each other when you leave.
Goddamn right. But one more game for you. That is called Crazy Dreams Best Of, developed and published by Dream Studio. This one was out March 22nd on Steam for $9.99. Crazy Dreams Best Of is the first 2D platformer made by its own community. Discover 100 outstanding levels, made by brilliant creators all over the world. Purnell, what is this game?
Well, it's essentially a 2D platformer. You are a cat with a magical wand, You can jump, you can run, you can fling fireballs, or not fireballs, but magic balls from the staff, and you can occasionally run up walls. Now, that just described the game, essentially, because you deal with every level will involve a number of platforming challenges and a goal you have to reach. Now, this game has Mario Maker Syndrome, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. What I mean by that is when Mario Maker works out well, you get some pretty freaking awesome levels that were created by a community. Same goes for Magic Cats, which I just keep calling it that, because it's a magical cat.
The original game, I believe, was called Magic Cats, but is like a sequel or what it is, because the original game was a free to play, and I think that may have been the whole level editor thing.
I would just say, let's just call it just like it's not even a sequel, it's like a spinoff game, because it was like, hey, this game is cool, let's let people showcase their creations, and then possibly let them profit from it in the way of this deal that we've got going.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in that regard, I think it's a brilliant idea. It rewards creativity, it lets people kind of see this is what we can do, especially if we're making a product that's going to ultimately make it into a video game. But the other downside to what I was saying, though, was like, just like how Mario Maker has some shining levels that work out well, Mario Maker also has some pretty meh levels, and you felt bad when you played them. And those exist in this game as well. So one level I thought that was a pretty cool example was the one where you entered a little box area, and there was a crow monster above you who asked you for assistance. And by assisting him, you essentially walked left to right, and the crow would follow you, shooting fireballs upwards into a pattern of monsters that were slowly scrolling down the screen. Essentially, you were playing Space Invaders, and someone made a Space Invaders game using the Magic Cats level design engine. I thought that was very creative.
That's very pretty cool.
And there's also a couple of cool levels I've come across, which involved a lot of ceiling running and well-timed jumps, and just general good execution. But then I also came across some levels where it just felt like the goal was just to hold right and watch some cool stuff happen. I was like, oh, this is nice, whatever. But I think in the end, especially at the price, it's kind of cool just to kind of run around and see what these guys came up with and what they thought was, you know, worth putting into the game and experiencing it firsthand, because the good levels are pretty good and worth experiencing. After you beat a number of certain levels on a world, you unlock the boss stage. And boss stages are, I don't really know what to call them, bosses per se. It's usually just like a high level of a challenge of sorts. Like, for example, the first level's boss is a crow that is throwing fireballs at you. You have to keep throwing your fireballs at him to ultimately exhaust him and move on. But the crow shows up in other places too. Like, he's not a special guy. He's just the boss there. And then later on, you just fight him anyway. So I saw that. I was like, well, what was the point of the crow? What was the point of this being called a boss level? And there's other levels like that too, where you might fight like a weird jousting animal. Like, you got to fight a guy like he's like on another animal's back. You got to deal with that. You might be getting chased by a swarm of bugs.
Is it one of those things where the crow is just like a generic game sprite, and it's up to the level creator to decide how they want to use it? Could that be what it is?
That's a good description. I think that's probably what it was. Maybe the Magic Cat's creation system that they went with here was some of the boss levels could be construed as, what is a level that was created with the intent of the guy being used as a boss, which would actually explain take what you just said and make it 100% applicable.
Yeah.
Applicable. But I had fun with what I played. I'm not going to sit here and say the game was terrible or stupid or anything like that, but I am going to say that you are not getting a 100% great levels here. You're going to get some good levels, some meh levels, and that's going to pretty much be left up to the opinion of the player as to what they ultimately get.
I mean, you get that with all user-created games anyway.
This is very true. This is very true. And I feel like, obviously this probably doesn't really belong in a review in a sense, but I feel like I want to say it anyway, is that there's something kind of nice also about the fact that there's just that 50-50 spread going there, where, like, you know, some of the good chunk of the money is going towards the people who made the game levels. It's almost like a developer junior source that rewarded them for coming up with these creative level builds. And the game itself isn't bad. So at the $10 price point and that structure and the fact that I did enjoy what I played for the most part, I think it's actually, I think I would, is that, would that be a fuck it, why not there?
That would be your call. Usually $10 might be a bit high to be a fuck it, why not? But, you know, that's your call. I'm curious, is the level creation stuff included in this version of the game?
Honestly, I didn't even notice, like, one way or the other. I didn't even look to check. I just ran around. I'm usually that guy that ignores level creation stuff because I'm the guy that would just make a level where you go from left to right holding the button.
Oh, I'm the same way. Like, I never fuck around with that stuff. So, me personally, if I were to get this game, it would 100% be to play the 100 levels that are given to you.
Yep, that's me. Like, I can't do level creation. I can sit here and tell you over your shoulder, do this. No, do that. Make a level with this, but I'll never make it myself.
Put that thing over here.
and that other thing,
put that over here.
You need to make a level that plays music while I can play it. You need to make a level where the items glow and then you pick them up. Oh, and for the record, that's another thing that kind of bugged me about the game, but I think it's kind of a part of the game's creation. It's putting it out there right now. So Mario has coins. This game has, I guess, fireflies. Levels have fireflies that you can pick up and collect. I have no idea what they're for. I have a feeling they were probably collect 100, get a life in the original game, but in this game, they're kind of pointless. They're just kind of there, and if you want to collect them, go nuts. I also know that you can unlock different costumes for the cats, like so that the cat can have like a different outfit on or a different magical wand. It's all cosmetic stuff, but that still can be kind of cool. And another thing I like about the game, too, is the fact that when you go to pick a level, it shows you, like, I guess the handle of the guy who created the level and a little quote that the guy probably created to sort of describe whether the level, either the level itself or their thought when they made the level. So it's like a little bit of their personality gets thrown in there, too. It's like, this is my stage. I live in Los Angeles. Play my level. I like that, honestly, kind of, too. It's like, this is kind of nice, you know. It has a little bit of quirky personality to it. And I would like to see more companies do stuff like this. It'd be cool to see like a big name company say, hey, we've got a ton of Mario games out there. I don't know, you guys just designed this Mario game. We'll call it official levels.
And we'll share the money with you. I think that's the coolest thing in this. I think that alone would convince me to encourage people to buy the game because you're not just supporting an indie game company. You're supporting other gamers who made these stages. So next time you play something like Mario Maker and you're like, man, this stage is really awesome. These people should get paid for this shit. With this one.
Mm-hmm. And that's why my wording was more towards the fuck it, why not? Not because it's a bad game, but it's cheap. More like it's a decent game, but there's this weird altruism thing going here that I really liked to the point where I want to see people play this game and give it some love. And even honestly, go about and rate the levels. Tell them which levels you thought were good, which levels you thought were bad. I mean, that's kind of the point too. You know, rate the stages. But ultimately, I think it's a good product and worth giving some time to.
Cool. I'm gonna have to probably grab this tomorrow or the next day because the game's $9.99, and my Steam account right now is at $9.96.
Isn't that the best shit?
So I gotta sell me some trading cards or something.
Which is that actually a thriving market? Like people buy those trading cards because I've never done anything with any of the ones I've acquired over my like 15+ years on Steam.
Yeah, sell them, man. Some of them you won't get much. Like you'll get 2-3 cents for them. Every now and then you'll get one that you'll get a quarter out of it, and that's pretty nifty. That's a free quarter.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So hell, that's a free nickel if you have cheap shit.
It all adds up in the end. If I sell 500 trading cards, which let's be blunt, I could have that many. I never did anything with them.
You might. You never know.
I mean, that's good money. That could be $50.
There you go, man. Pernell, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Buy Super Daryl Deluxe, goddammit. I'm not fronting. This game is good. I loved it. It made me smile. And Dan and Gary are model gents, and I've never met them. So there's no smoozing here.
And bring it to Xbox.
Yes, bring it to Xbox. Give everyone the chance to play it. And just be cool, people. This world is fucked up. Don't be part of the fuck up. Be cool. That's my thing.
All right, moving on from one regular to another. Chris Taylor, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's a fun episode. It's just you and Pernell. That's it.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah, he did his, and now it's your turn, so...
Let's do it. Let's talk about a lot of games.
Vidya games. You got four to talk about. That's a lot. And we're going to start off.
Video games.
We're going to start off with Deep Ones, developed by Burp Games, published by Sometimes You. This one is out April 11th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $4.99. Diver suffers a crash on his submarine, and the Great Red Octopus is the reason of this. But Diver isn't exactly as simple as he looks. On his path to get his sub back, he will witness beautiful landscapes and acquire trustworthy allies. That is, of course, if you'll be able to help him survive and triumph over the evil. Chris, what is this game?
The evil.
The evil.
So, Deep Ones is basically a really slow moving platformer. Seems to be kind of a Metroidvania because it does require you to get some different items in order to get to different parts. But a lot of it does seem to be sort of like point of no return, at least in the early parts of the game. It's actually, as far as I played, it didn't really seem to be clear on that. The game is styled like an old ZX Spectrum computer. I say ZX because it's a computer that I don't even know if we got that in the United States. But we would call it the ZX Spectrum if we did.
Look at you with your foreign language skills.
Look at me. So yes, on, you know, the ZX, it's like Commodore 64, you know, early DOS, big blocky pixels, you know, limited range of colors. But this particular game, it's, you know, what I've termed 8-bit plus. That is to say, it is blocky and it does look a lot like, authentically a C64 or Spectrum game or whatever, but it does have a few modern flares, and in fact the soundtrack is quite modern, even though it does contain some of that nice synthy bass that we look for in these types of games. Like, it basically starts off fairly straightforward. It's very very stylized in that it's got some excellent creepy factors to it, despite the fact that it's largely just black and, you know, these sort of outlines of enemies and stuff. It still manages to convey a pretty good sense of dread, especially in the intro when you get to see the big red octopus. It's actually really quite well done. I really like that. But so
it seems like people with thalassophobia should avoid this one, huh?
Yo, look who's got the fancy words now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I love that subreddit. Just people posting pictures of like, oh, well, this scares the shit out of me in regards to water.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, though, is that like the water part of it is not like not quite what you think. Because like the thing that you worry about with water is drowning, of course. And you only lose air, like your diver just wears like this old timey like diving suit with seemingly no real apparatus for breathing, but you get 3 oxygen bubbles and they're only taken away when you get hit by an enemy. So it's one of those where it's like
take your breath away.
yes they do. But yeah, like, so instead, like, it is watery, but it doesn't quite convey like water so much. The only thing that really makes you feel like you're underwater is the fact that the game is sluggish. That is to say, you move very slow. Your first weapon is a harpoon gun and it fires like super slow. And so one of the
like an underwater weapon
would, yes. And one of your first boss fights actually took me several tries to get through. It was me and my harpoon gun against an entire school of sharks that were coming at me one, sometimes two at a time, and you can't shoot harpoons two at a time. So it becomes this thing of like just trying to clear them as best you can without getting hit. So, you know, because you only have those 3 hits and you got like 12 sharks. So yeah. It becomes like it's actually really challenging. So I quite enjoyed that about it. I didn't get far enough to see all this storyline that they're talking about or these partners that they're talking about, and I did play for hours, so apparently this game is a pretty it's a pretty meaty game in terms of like how much there is, because despite having played and explored like a whole bunch, I still kind of felt like I was only at the beginning, because I still only had the one weapon, and you know, I just cleared screen after screen. So apparently this is a pretty good sized game.
A hefty game for $5, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
So for that $5, what do you think of it?
For that $5, like, if you are into that sort of, you know, a mix of 8-bit and terror, then I think that this is really compelling. If you're into, like, fast action or precise action, then you might give this one a miss, or at least watch a video and see if this is something you want to get into, because it really seems more like this is a game about exploring an ambience and challenging fights that are challenging because of your limitations, not because of your skill, really, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, because I felt like, well, if I could move faster and shoot faster, I could do this so easily. But in fact, it's sort of working with this slow, floaty jump and like a thing that shoots once every like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So, for $5, it's worth trying. It definitely is compelling enough to that you're going to want to see what's, you know, hiding in that next screen.
Is it cheap enough, do you think, for a fuck it, why not, where, hey, it's only $5?
Yeah.
What else are you going to do? Just buy it.
It is. If it's a game that that I could afford if I just skip Starbucks for one day, then...
Fuck it. Just get it.
Yeah, just get it.
Fuck it.
Sure.
Good stuff. Keeping with the theme of high impact, super fast paced games, the next one to talk about is called Word Search by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games. It released April 12th on the Switch for $7.99. Word Search by Paugi, and I hope it's Paugi or Pogi, one of those.
Includes, I call it Pogi, but it's whatever.
It could be. Oh,
we'll find out from them sooner or later.
Probably. It's like, listen, Dick. It's called Smith. It's get just them, spelled weird.
Get them on the show to yell at you.
Possibly. Word Search includes more than 300 puzzles to keep you and your friends, online or off, puzzling for hours. Paugi's Word Search puzzles are expertly handcrafted for your enjoyment and are stuffed to the brim with words in every direction. Chris, what is this game?
It's a classic Word Search. So this one really warmed my heart to play, because when I was a kid, anytime we went to the grocery store, I would beg my mom to buy me one of those $3 books of like word searches that they'd have like there next to the gum and the mints and stuff.
Yeah, boy, that was me too. Mazes.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah. And I used to work on those books. Like, I probably did more of that than school. word searches are very, very fun. You know, it's great for people who like details, pattern recognition, things like that. So they've taken that and put it on basically the perfect system to accommodate this sort of thing. Because the Switch, being a, you know, nice touchscreen portable kind of thing, you know, that you can use a stylus on, that basically gives it to you right there. And instead of having to do that perfect line draw that you always had to do, otherwise your page would end up messed up and you'd be crossing out letters accidentally and stuff. Like, if you remember that. Switch, no problem. You just touch one point and drag it to the other point. So it's a kind of drag and drop on highlighting words. So really easy to play fast. The game times you, but you don't run out of time. It only just tells you how well you did the puzzle. So that gives each puzzle some replay value. Because, you know, you're not going to remember all the solutions to 300 puzzles enough to where it doesn't challenge you every time.
Yeah.
So it's really just trying to beat yourself, which is great. The other really interesting thing about this one is that it has local multiplayer for up to 4 people and online multiplayer, which you and I tested out.
And it works really well. I wish Nintendo had some form of, you know, real friend system, so you could invite friends instead of just going to online play and getting matched up with whoever's available. Luckily, we were able to get matched with each other in seconds. It was stupidly quick how fast we were matched up.
Yeah, that's the thing about, you know, Nintendo is at least the very, very minimal amount of online play that they will accommodate. They at least make it work. But then, of course, a lot of that's probably on the developer as well. But yeah, it was really quick to set up a match. We played a game and it didn't even declare a winner. It just told us how fast we did it. So it's very much a no pressure co-op, experience. And like I said, it's probably like pretty interesting with four players at once. Why you would be playing that instead of Overcooked, I don't know, but. Maybe you know enough people who are word search fanatics, and I don't know. But it at very least, it's a very appreciated feature. Oh, and the music's really fun. It's got, like, funk and blues and jazz, and, like, the songs are a little on the, like, kind of elevator-y generic side, but I actually found myself grooving to it whenever I streamed my gameplay on this one.
Yeah, which even while we were playing online, mine was muted. And yours was playing the music, and I'm just, like, humming along to your music.
Yeah, I totally knew the blues song by the time. I was streaming it, and I happened to get hosted by a friend of mine who's partnered, so I had 50 people in my chat room, like...
Holy shit.
Watching me play word search and, like, giving me, like, clues and, like, where to go and stuff. It actually turned out to be a great game for streaming. And yeah, I was like improvising lyrics to the blues song. It was actually kind of funny. I was using the words from the word search to like sing this cheesy blues song.
Nice.
So this game is just pure fun. It's more fun than you even think that a word search on Switch could be. So
it really is. So $8 on this one. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely get it. And then add me as a friend, on Switch and then play me online.
Or if you're still on the fence, if our gushing hasn't sold you yet, it has a free demo. So get the demo.
Oh, dang.
Enjoy nice. It. Yeah, it had a free demo out like 2 weeks before the game launched.
Oh, and there was one more thing while we're gushing. the game also, as a reward for solving puzzles, throws the worst puns in the world at you. So it has that going for it, too.
It really it's does.
Great one for the dads.
Oh, God, it is. There's some really bad ones in there, too, and I loved all of them.
Yes. Me, too. That's great.
All of them. And then, of course, the sheer number of puzzles with over 300 of them. I mean, it's going to keep you busy.
That's an $8 book right there.
Goddamn right it is. From one more super fast-paced game to yet another, we're going to talk about Animated Jigsaw's Beautiful Japanese Scenery, developed by Deco and Bottle Cube, published by Rainy Frog, came out April 5th on the Switch for $9.99, put together pieces of an animated jigsaw puzzle of Japan's most beautiful scenery and watch it gradually come to life before your eyes. Chris, is this a puzzle game?
It is a puzzle game in the most literally classic, most classic sense of the word. Okay, so this is another one I was really excited to see on Switch. I love puzzles. I hate puzzles. That is to say, I love I love linking in pieces. I love watching the picture come to life. You know, finding those edge pieces and then, you know, filling it all in and, you know, whiling away the hours. I hate the fact
clearing
that,
like, a table,
clearing a table,
keeping cats away, cleaning up,
losing a piece. Oh my God. You get like 499 of the 500 pieces together and you find out that one is just like gone.
Yep.
And just the whole thing goes in the trash. So this game eliminates all of the bad parts of it and keeps all the good parts and surprisingly has some even better parts. So I'll go into that.
Interesting.
Yes. So you get to choose your puzzles. Now, you start off with three unlocked, and you just unlock some others as you go along. The first three puzzles are 60 piece. And so, you know, you put them together on the screen. And then the next set that you unlock are 120 piece and then 240 piece. But every time you beat the level, it unlocks a 120 piece and 240 piece version of the same puzzle that you just cleared.
Oh.
So then you get to replay puzzles with double the pieces every time. So your first level becomes, like, when it goes from being a 60 to a 240 piece, it's actually ultra challenging in that sense. So that's really great.
It triples the amount of puzzles in a way.
It does, yeah. And so the actual gameplay of it is really, really good. That does pretty much everything right. For one, you have three music options that you can choose in the thing, or you can turn off sound effects or whatever. Like, you can toggle all those, which is important for the reason that this is a game that you actually are probably going to want to mute. The sound effects are not, it's a clack for, you know, when the pieces come together. That's just about it. The music are three Japanese flavored songs. The first one, by the way, music one, it took me a little while to pinpoint it because it's just a traditional song. And then I realized it's the intro music to Piston Honda from Mike Tyson's Punch Out. So you're welcome if you play this game and you're like, what is that song? For that music one, that's what it is. Music two is extremely depressing. I really find it funny that it's even in there. It's very drab and it's like, it's rainy day music when you're putting together these like really bright puzzles. And then anyway, it's amusing that there's music there, but if you're working on puzzles, honestly, I work on puzzles while I'm doing other things. So like while I'm listening to, you know, while I'm watching Twitch or while I'm like watching a movie or something like that, this is a good game to go on in the background. That tangent aside, the feature that I probably enjoy the most about the interface is that there's a button that lets you sort the pieces into edges and middles.
Oh,
yes. So yes. It makes a stack of edges and then you can just work on the edges and then you can spread the other one around. And by the way, it's a toggle. So anytime you push it, it, you know, sorts them into those two piles. If you push it again, it just scatters them where you can just sit there and like try and pinpoint your piece. Now, here's where this is a uniquely video game type thing. The puzzles are these really high def, and I mean gorgeous high def. They're these really high def animated sort of GIF style pictures. So they're actually going in like a maybe 5 second video loop the whole time, including when it's all separated out. So you can actually, if you're having trouble finding a piece, you can find like pieces in a certain part of the animation loop. So like if there's like, let's say a firework going off or something like that, you can then take like these undifferentiated pieces that all look like night sky and just pick the ones together that look like fireworks occasionally. And so it actually adds this whole other little dynamic to it.
That is really cool.
Yeah. And then when the pieces all put together, the lines disappear and you get to stare at this awesome HD image that, it truly is gorgeous. Like these are some really excellent pictures.
Nice. How many puzzles are in the game?
I saw 10 in the first screen, but it seems like there's more to unlock. So.
And with three different sizes for each one, it'll keep you occupied.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It definitely will. And you're going to want to go back and play puzzle, you know, play them again, because I mean, that's the whole point of having puzzles is that you put them together more than once.
The only thing missing is that satisfaction of destroying a puzzle once you put it together.
I know.
Now
the only little thing, and there's really no way around this, but I should mention it anyway, is that once you do get into those 120 and especially the 240 piece puzzles, it becomes much harder to use your finger or a stylus on the screen. So then, you know, obviously you can move it to the TV and, you know, you'll have a lot more to play with, but then you got to deal with the controller, which The controller is a, you know, the stick moves the mouse around, a mouse cursor around, and then you just, you know, push the button to drag and drop pieces. It's so much more intuitive with the stylus, but, you know, just make sure you get like a good kind of sharper stylus, something that's maybe more appropriate to a Switch. I use this big, like, rubbery one, so
I have never in my life used a stylus on the Switch.
Well, you might for this one.
It doesn't
I don't know.
Come with one, so.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's.
I just use my dime a dozen. It's a touchscreen.
We literally got a pile of them that say Sony, that say PlayStation VR on them. That Catherine got from her work one time.
Nice. Send me one.
Okay. I'll do it. Yeah, so it's pretty good. Like I said, though, like once the pieces get so small, it becomes a little harder to use that touch interface. So just fair warning on that one. However, the puzzles are so fun that, like, I think anybody can get into this. Like, you know what a puzzle is, and this one does it well, and it dresses it well, and it's a worthwhile experience.
Cool. So $10?
yeah, get it. That's the price of a puzzle. So, and you get like at least 10.
Tripled.
There you go.
With all the different sizes. Good stuff. Let's slow it down. We've talked about a lot of fast paced stuff. Let's ease things up. Final game to talk about tonight is called Rack Exoverse, developed and published by Final Boss Entertainment, released March 6th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Rack Exoverse is a tower defense first-person shooter with roguelike elements. Defend ever-changing worlds with an arsenal of weapons, towers, and much, much more. This sounds very slow, very relaxing, unlike the other games we talked about. So what is Rack Exoverse?
Well, what's truly slow about Rack Exoverse is how long it took me to like actually get to play it. Because I'm not good at PC stuff, so it took me forever to figure out how to get it to go to full screen.
Well, there was a glitch that's being worked on as well, so it wasn't just your fault.
That's fine. But yeah, once I got it to work, then it's, so this is a pretty unique animal. It is a first person shooter. You know, and eventually you actually do get to do some shooting, but, so it's got actually a few modes. So first off, well, of course, as you start the game, you go into this place where you can buy your weapon and you can buy your turrets, for the actual gameplay. And you start off each time, if you have no money or less than 1,000, you start off with $1,000. You buy your weapon, you buy your turrets, then you get into the game where basically there's a portal on one side of a stage, and then on the other side there's the, I forget what they call it, it's just the thing you're supposed to protect. It's a ball on a machine apparatus. Apparently it's from the other Rack game.
So you gotta protect your balls.
Nice. And there's there's enemies that are gonna come after those balls from that portal, and so when you're doing the setup process, which, by the way, you get plenty of time to do it, you get this, like, almost looks like a portal gun sort of thing that will set up your columns, and then you can set turrets on top of those columns, just like in a tower defense game. The game draws a line for you that will actually show you the path the enemies are going to take. Now, the couple ways that they show you early on in the game that you can do is that you can set up the, if you set up the columns right next to each other, they build a bridge between them, and then that's something the enemy can't get through, so they'll go around it. The game prevents you from locking the enemies back. Like, you have to, like, get rid of them. You can't just, you know, lock them in. But once you build, those things, then you can put your turret on top, and depending on, what kind of turret gun and what price you've paid for it, it will show you on the ground what their range is for shooting. So once you get all that set up, now each time you set up a pillar, you can set up as many pillars and as many turrets as you want if you have the money. So better turrets cost more money, better, you know, columns, more money, and then arming yourself also costs money. So your set going in is going to be pretty basic with just the $1,000. But then once you have it all set up, then you basically tell the game to go, and enemies will start flooding in waves, just like a tower defense game. And you get to watch, like, still in first person mode, you can basically run to anywhere on the whole map. You won't get shot by your own gun, which is great, because I set up a lot of them. So you can run anywhere that you want within that level, and watch the enemies, like, see them get mowed down with machine guns. And if they happen to get past them, then you can take matters into your own hands. There's one weapon that you always have, and that's your trusty sword, which is a badass sword. It's this weird Minecraft-looking thing with, like, floating cubes around it and stuff. And, like, you hit an enemy with that, and they explode into meaty chunks.
Nice.
So, yeah. At least the weaker enemies. It's a meaty, chunky game, for sure. I mean, you got machine guns mowing down these guys, and, you know, your sword blows them all up. It was actually better than the shotgun, which I thought I was, you know, getting my money's worth out of, but turns out the sword was way better. So you can stop all the enemies yourself, but there's usually too many of them to get just with your melee weapons, so you do kind of have to rely on your turrets and pillars and stuff. And of course, if enemies get past you, then and they get to your balls, they just start whacking your balls, and it has its own meter which goes down. So it's not a super punishing game, but the much harder enemies that you find a little bit later in the game can do quite a lot of damage.
Did you say your balls are on top of something in this?
Some apparatus.
So are they trying to whack your balls off the apparatus?
Yeah. I would say that is a fair assessment.
Developers going to hear this review and be like, these guys are fucking assholes.
Like, we patched the game for these guys?
It's not about whacking balls. What the hell, guys?
So, all that to say that the game is quite fun. It's very unique. Like I said, it's got, a really, really interesting thing going for it. And of course, the roguelike element is that every time you start the game, whether you lose or win, like, you basically just keep going through waves, and then it changes up the level, and then, you know, the levels become slightly harder, but all randomized. And, you know, once you get through enough levels in one vista, then you get to move on to the next vista, you know, like any roguelike. Not only is the action and enemies, like, randomized, but also the item shop is randomized. So if you die and you wind up back in that item shop, you'll get to keep your money, which is great. If you got over 1,000, of course. If you didn't, then you just start over with 1,000.
No.
And then you can, like, buy different stuff, because the shops are actually randomized too. So you get to try out a whole bunch of different cool things, and there's no real, like, pressure to, you know, do these ultra challenging, like, set levels. Like, that's the thing about tower defense games, is that they get too hard too quick for me. But it seems like this one, especially for the fact that you can take a badass sword and, like, just cut through the enemies yourself, it really makes this one feel a lot more satisfying as a defense game. As a first person shooter, probably won't sate the hardcore, because there's the levels really aren't that big. There's not a whole lot of exploring, and, you know, the guns are basically standard fare, but you do get a bazooka, so that's necessary.
So it's more of a tower defense game with first-person shooter mechanics instead of a first-person shooter with tower defense mechanics.
That's how I felt about it. Now, it might change up later in the game, but this being also roguelike, it's hard enough that I wasn't able to get, like, super far into it.
Yeah. And then still in early access as well. I know the game now, they say that they have 2 worlds, 2 characters, 11 weapons and monsters, and the end game is supposed to have 4 worlds, 4 bosses, 25 weapons and monsters, all 4 different tower types. So it looks like there's still a lot to come in the game as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fantastic then. Also, I really like the cel-shaded look. I hate that I'm old enough now to call that retro, but it was nice to see again. For once.
Well, in our day, that was a stylistic choice because of technical limitations. Nowadays, you goddamn kids just use it as retro visuals for your Pokemans and your Lady Gagas and
your Dragon Quests.
Off my lawn.
I've actually been playing Dragon Quest VIII on 3DS lately, so I've been seeing plenty of. It's awesome, but I've been seeing the cel shading lately, so it's not like it was a big surprise, but it's cool to see in a first person shooter, because that's honestly kind of rare.
Yeah, it is. I think Borderlands is the last one that really ran with that look.
Oh yeah, I think as far as that goes.
I think we've seen a couple since then, but like Borderlands was the big one.
Right, right.
Oh man. So let's see. All this content in the game, it is still planned to be in early access anywhere from 12 to 18 months. So it looks like there's still plenty of work in the game. $15 now, though. They did say that the price is anticipated to go up on full release. So for the $15 asking price right now, what do you think?
Yeah, go ahead and get it. I mean, better to get a game now for less money than have to pay, you know, a whole lot later. This definitely is a product that sold me on itself. Like I said, once everything got running for me and everything, felt great with the controller. I played it with an Xbox One controller, and because that's the way I like to play my FPSs. I'm not into the mouse thing, especially since I use a laptop.
Same.
Yeah, so And that's the other thing. It won't weigh down your computer so much. It looks good, but it's not super heavy on specs and all that. That might change, though, so I'm not going to sell it on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and get it. I mean, if you like first-person shooters, tower defense, and roguelikes, I mean, this mashes up all three in a pretty satisfying way. So nice. It's worth it just to check out this unique experience.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Thanks again to Purnell for coming on and chatting about games as well. This is it. This is a short one. I like these shows that are only like barely over an hour long. I feel like I have to make up for it with a shitload of music now, but I'm still not going to do that because I'm excited to have a show under an hour and a half.
All right. Well, congratulations. Glad we could be a part of this.
But yeah, that is it for this show. Chris, thanks again for coming on. Final words for this one. Chris, go feed your cat.